So who is going to be the first? Let's look at anybody from this session, browsers and user interfaces. You should know. Okay, you're not, there's not any, which is surprising. Smarter browsing? We don't have any smarter browsing? In the data mining, identifying structure in web pages. Okay. So you have your talk here? Presumably?
Yes. Yes.
Skin. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you just go to slideshow. Once you're ready, go to slideshow and do rehearse timing. Okay.
What? How do you, I don't.
Yeah, you just have to put it around you so that you it would record what you're saying.
Okay. Okay. This one. Okay. Then let's start. So what I'm going to talk about is the paper web object retrieval. And I have just five minutes, so let's be quick. First, let's talk about the main topic of the paper. This paper talks about how to treat the information on the web as different structured objects, which have attributes with different weights in terms of their importance. That is to say, there's no just a bag of words, but several a large amount of objects on the web, the documents and all the information are considered as objects with attributes. And these attributes may have different kinds, different weights based on their importance to this object. Okay. The second thing is how to improve the performance of the information retrieval based on these structured objects, especially for the precision. And we have talked about this in class and how to improve the precision, but now the topic here is to how to use the structured information, the objects in this paper. Okay, let's move on to the proposed models. And there are three models here. The first is unstructured model, second is structured model, and the third is a hybrid model. And the unstructured model is pretty much simple. Each record is just a bag of words. So this is just a traditional information retrieval. And it takes into account the record extraction accuracy when merging two different records or several different records. And here, this is a formula which is used in this model. And we can see that the RK is a record, and the P, this P is how this term W is related to this record. And the alpha K is the record extraction accuracy. So this is just a weight. And let's move on to the second model. The second model is structured model. So every object, every record is considered as object. So you can see this formula here. This is also the term, and this is object. The beta j is the importance of this of the j's feature or say attributes of this object. And here are two ways here. The gamma k is the attribute extraction accuracy, and alpha k is the record extraction accuracy. So here you can see that each of these is a structured object with multiple attributes, and attributes have different weights as beta j, and it takes into account both record extraction accuracy and attribute extraction accuracy. There's two weights here. So this is a highly structured model, and this paper says that both of these are not the best way to do the web object retrieval. So they made a trade-off between these two models and get a hybrid model. We can see in the formula here, this part, this is the importance of the attribute J, and this is the attribute extraction accuracy. So when it within this bracket, it says when this attribute extraction is correct, we use this importance weight, and if it's incorrect, we use the prior probability of these attributes. So it's 1 over n. So this is just a hybrid model. And this is proved, empirically to be the best way to do web object retrieval. Okay. So this is my criticism of this paper. So it has advantages and disadvantages. So the first thing, the advantage is that shows clearly that either the absolutely unstructured model or absolutely structured model is not the best way of information retrieval with respect to the retrieval precision. So trade-off need to make, and this is its main contribution, I think. And it also addresses how to handle multiple records corresponding to a same object and how to handle large amount of inconsistent information on web. So there are different records about one object, and how to handle this is a critical problem. And the disadvantage is that it's not really a novel idea, I think. We have talked about this in class. How to handle this information on web as structured information and object. But it just used the term object to make itself seem new, okay? And the formula used in the paper to estimate the query relevance of a document seems not reasonable enough, because I think the TF-IDF is needed to use instead of the formula used in this. And how this paper is correlated to our course, and for the information retrieval is something about the web object retrieval. The back and forth is Jacquard similarity, and it takes advantage of structured data. And there are something is NBC-like measure, and the record merging is something related to the information integration. Okay, that's all. Great. Thanks. Thank you.
One thing, thanks Yang for going first. For the rest of you guys, I'm going to be very strict with 5 minutes. I mean, I only stood here for him, but I'll be on you if you don't get done. The other thing is, I really liked your slides. By the way, the last section, get to the last section, because there is a tendency to get stuck with the details. But when you make the connection to what people learned in the class, they're more likely to go back and read the paper. Okay, think of this as advertisement for making other people read the same paper that you read. Okay, if you don't want them to, that's fine. You'll be done much faster. Okay, that's fine too. Okay, the next one, is there anybody from anything else from here? Which one? We have to go in the order. Is there anybody higher than him? Okay, so is there anybody? Okay, let me see. Mining textual data, nobody there? On this? Okay, there.
You sent the mail just now. You are causing a lot of trouble.
Okay. Let's start?
Sure. Okay. The paper.
Speak loud. Speak very loud.
The paper which I read was Organizing and Searching the World Wide Web of Facts. And this was the second in the series of paper. This is a step two which they have published. And step one was published in AAAI 06 in last year. So I'll start with the last one, which is because it is easier to understand that way. That is how it is related to what we studied in our class. So we studied information extraction using templates. Like this example was given multiple times. Like the capital of India is New Delhi. So the goal here is if we have a template like the capital of dash is new is dash, then we can extract information from the web. But we need to have these templates first. So the first paper which these people published was extracting these templates from the web itself. So to extract these templates, they use the class and the attribute. So for example, country is a class here and the capital is an attribute. So you can, if you have those country and the class, using World Wide Web itself, you can extract these templates. So that was presented in a different paper. But getting these attributes for a particular class is also a very difficult problem. So this paper addresses that problem. So what they do is they extract attributes for a particular class from anonymized search queries, that is the Google queries, which is entered. So for example, if you take video games as the class, the price, creator and genre are the attributes. So the procedure which they follow is they have a set of class and a set of instances for that particular class, and they search Google queries for the occurrence of those instances, and along with that they have a set of seed attributes which is present already. So they search for those instances and those particular attributes which occur in the same query, and if it occurs in the same query, then they extract the other words in the particular query. That will become the template, and that will be one of the vectors, and the other vector is the candidate attributes. They do the same thing for candidate attributes, and they get the templates for the candidate attributes and the seed attributes. The templates for the candidate attributes and the seed attributes, and they do similarity between those two. So when they do similarity between those two, the highest occurring, and they rank the candidate attributes. So the candidate attributes which have the highest ranking will be the seeds, will be the matching attributes for this particular class. So that was their method. I forgot to put the example here, but suppose you have seed attributes as the same thing, price and creator, and in the search queries they search for video games along with price and creator, and whenever there's a match they extract the particular template, that is the other words in the same query. That will be one of the words, one of the vectors, and they do extract candidate attributes for the video games. So, and they similarly extract vectors for the candidate attributes also. So then they do a matching, and then they extract attributes. So the criticism of this was how to get all the classes and their example instances. For getting all the candidate attributes and the attributes, you have to have all the instances of a particular class. For example, when you have video game, you have NFS or something like that. If their method requires all these instances to be present, and other one was but when you're doing it on a worldwide web scale, getting all these instances is pretty difficult. And the second one was their step in was first extracting attributes from the Google queries, and then using those attributes extracting the templates, and then using those templates extracting the facts. So it is a series of heuristic methods, and the number of the error can grow as in each of these steps. But they have not included experiments which directly extract these facts from the Google or World Wide Web. They have used only to show it to extract the attributes for that particular class. So this experiment is very important, and that they have not included. And this, as I have already told, another validation using HITS, and this was one of the relation which I thought would was somewhat related to what we learned in the class. But this again is not possible because when you extract attributes, you are not co-occurrence of the attribute does not mean that they are related. So you cannot just use hits to measure the validity of the attributes. That's it.
By the way, if you have 1 minute, if you have questions, you can ask me.
I think the slides were not pretty informative.
So hits, what do you mean? Is the hits algorithm or the
hits algorithm? Hits algorithm.
Which is authorities and hub? I don't understand.
No. The one which we used for validation, the PMI algorithms.
PMI. Okay.
So that cannot be used here. So the validation of the extracted attributes is one of the problem, and the other problem was. There are too many of these steps which are heuristic steps. First they extract attributes, and then they extract templates, and then they extract the facts.
The technical contribution in this paper?
The technical contribution is extracting of those attributes, which again can be used for extracting of the templates. What they say is like the Google queries is like the wisdom of crowd, right? So the knowledge is encapsulated in that. So if you can extract related attributes from the Google queries, then you can extract related templates for these kind of information extraction from the World Wide Web.
And how do they know how to know
offline?
Okay.
I think there's something wrong with the line, because it stops and actually...
No, you have to see the second part.
Yeah,
that's correct, it is fine. Okay. Anybody else here in this? And then in the similarity search? Predictive modeling of web users? Okay.
So is somebody actually going to be the bad guy and look at the time?
Why doesn't it? It should work. So people are not allowed to go back to the slide. I have a feeling Shankar knew this.
This paper is dealing with the problem of predicting the user behavior, basically the queries of the user in a web source, using the information from the other web sources rather than just using the user click pattern in the same portal or same place. So it's basically doing this simple things like correlation analysis, dynamic time warping, but it doing a web scale, and this problem seems to be new that nobody has attempted this. So it's basically doing a correlation at modeling the queries of the queries in of user population in different sources as a time series, and finding out the correlation between these two time series. This problem is likely to have this impact on recommendation system and predictive market trends, which is commercially it's a high valued problem. The solution is discovered simple correlation with delays and dynamic time warping, and they are presenting a tool also for the time series analysis using DTW, which is not of high interest in contrast to our class. So they do the usual things like binning, topic categorization of the queries, smoothing of the queries. Those are usual pre-processing steps. So the this paper is mostly like a study paper. It's opening up a particular field. It gives us more questions than answers. So as far as this paper is concerned, it doesn't give any quantitative measure of predictive powers of different sources. It's qualitatively measures like, okay, if there is a spike, there is also a spike. It looks like though in English sentences, and doesn't give numbers or graphs to analyze the result. For as far as the multiple sources are concerned, they need to consider, and you should have to consider the residual predictive power of the sources also. Means even if one particular source is very good at giving predictions, but in context of some other sources, it may not be giving good information for predicting the user queries in the other source. So even though they are considering some six sources, they are actually not checking any mix and matches of the mixing and matching in the sources, and how these sources can be used campaignly to give a prediction. So that is another problem with this thing. And they don't even discuss the difference between a correlation versus causation between the sources. For example, a news article may be mostly causing the queries in a search engine, but a blog and a search site queries might be simply correlated. That it's not easy to evaluate that, but in a discussion level at least it's an interesting problem. And the other problems, like they don't compare the problem DTW with correlation, how good the results are. They are simply presenting the tool and not giving any quantitative comparison. In general, this paper leaves many questions open. So relational CSS, this is most related to the recommendation systems. In the Google News article recommendation system, we discussed that they're actually trying to predict the user behavior based on the correlation between the other user on the same site or his click history. But the most popular article, etc., they can actually predict from the using the information from the other sites also. As we discussed, the query logs are actually following a power law distribution. Means there is discussion in context to the ecom sites in the other list. And the standard methods like vector space, silhouette, clustering of queries, correlation analysis, everything is used in this paper also.
Okay.
So that's it from me.
Thanks. So who is next? We should be keeping track of who would be next. Anybody from the list? Any of those? Yeah? Okay, come over. Which one? Okay, yeah. I'm assuming that you guys remember the name of the paper you read. Did you already send it here? Nanli, there you go. Okay. Okay.
And go ahead, put that on.
Okay, the paper I'm going to talk about today is Content-Driven Reputation System for the Wikipedia. Okay, so before I start, I want to discuss a little about what is Wikipedia. It is a set of encyclopedias online, and anyone can create new articles or edit existing articles as long as they want to. And for each article, all versions of this article will be kept. So based on those contents, this reputation system does some analysis with which author edits which version of this article to assess the reputation of the authors. Generally speaking, what they do is if the author performed before to Wikipedia articles are preserved by subsequent users, then this author will gain some reputation. Otherwise, this author will lose some reputation. So I think the key point of this paper is how can we measure how much of the article has been edited later. So there are two measurements here. One is text life. The other is edit life. For text life, it considers the article as a bag of words and computes similarity. For the paper, they're just counting words. But I think here we can bring all the TF, EDIT-F, and all the similarity measurements to measure the similarity. And for edit life, it considers the organization of the article, which means if some author just cut and paste some part from of the article from one place to another place, the bag of words doesn't change, but we still think it is sort of some changes. Okay, the question here. The reason I choose this paper is because it has a big word, content-driven, there. I think it is sort of interesting. But after I read this paper, I think there are some reputation systems such as Amazon and eBay. They use the user-driven system, which means they use the ratings from different users to assess the reputation of other users. And here, I think this paper, they are finding an indirect way of getting ratings from subsequent users. They are not just purely do content-driven, like to analyze all the content of the articles to assess the reputation. Okay, here are some things related to our class. The first one is user-driven versus content-driven, which I've already talked about. The systems that use user-driven are Amazon and eBay, something like this. And content-driven is this system, which does some content analysis for different versions of articles. And the other thing is chronological system versus fixed-point systems. Chronological systems, such as this system and Amazon and eBay, they do the analysis based on a sequence of chronological ratings from different users. But for fixed point systems such as PageRank and Hits, they assess the reputation by at a fixed point time. And the other thing I think it is sort of interesting is when we are doing something search, we always consider articles as bag of words here. But in this paper, they doesn't just count this into consideration. They also take the organization of the text into consideration. I think there are some way. My intuition is we can add this idea to the search engine, then it will bring more exact results. Okay, that's all.
You know, you need help.
It's in the mail. By the way, I really liked this last presentation. I learned something. People should try to copy that. Not that paper, but should try to copy that kind of presentation.
Okay, so this paper is about the dynamics of collaborative tagging. And generally tagging, you know, the way it's done is the user enters a few keywords and to describe the particular resource, and then, you know, over a period of time, this stabilizes, and this paper tries to analyze and check if it really does stabilize over time, and also try and see if there are ways, you know, where these patterns can be, you know, used to form some kind of a classification system, and so the solution that the paper provides is that first it does prove that it follows a power law distribution, and then the main goal of this is to try and make use of the short head of the long tail, and in taking only that area, you are eliminating all the lesser relevant tags out of the picture, and using these tags you're trying to build some kind of a classification system. The method that they use is they define the distance between two tags as the number of tags that two tags have occurred for a particular resource. Say there is a resource and the number of times tag ti has occurred with tj divided by the square root of the number of times tag I has occurred with tag j. So this is a similarity metric, and based on this they have a tag correlation graph that they construct, where the size of the node determines the actual frequency of the occurrence of the tag, and the distance between a node to another node is the inverse similarity between tags. So that means the larger the distance between two nodes, it means that it's less similar. And the criticism is that firstly they introduce a term called information value of a tag, which is over a period of time how good the tag is able to differentiate from many other resources. Say if you use a very simple tag like sport, and then over a period of time it stabilizes and lot of resources are associated with a particular tag, you're not really able to differentiate that particular resource based on the tag. So there is some kind of human intervention that's still needed. You just cannot have a clean classification system, and we also have to look at the adversarial nature which is a big problem. And the other problem is there is no really good correspondence between the keyword and the concept. For example, if somebody has tagged the resource with say A, but it can also mean B, so but then there's no real way that result can be obtained. And a particular solution could be if you could use already existing extraction methods to find out the interaction, the similarity between tags, between words that already exist along with these tags, and then you could get much better results. And in relation to what we learned in class, we learned how tagging is done and how it's a bottom up approach, and it has basically a flat hierarchy. And the main reason as to why tagging is coming to the picture is because the user has always been entering only keywords, and to make the match as simple as possible. But then the trade-off would be there are lots of other things that are not possible, and the long tail phenomena of, and this paper actually talks about how you can use the long tail phenomena for a good thing. You can use the head of the long tail, the short heads for classification.
Do you know who is next? Is anybody here in this? Complex dynamics of collaborative tagging. Any of them here? No? Any of them here? It's already the second day of dub at this rate. Any there? Is it? This next one. So there is none on the pervasive web and mobility. Okay. Okay, there. Okay. You sent me a mail just now?
Yeah.
And your name is?
Venkat.
Which one? This one?
A second.
This one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hi, today I'm going to speak about a paper, Navigation Aided Retrieval. Well, this paper tries to address the problem that it says that people who, the conventional information retrieval methods just give an option for giving a query, and once the query is given, it just gives the answers, but it does not provide any navigational support. By navigational support, I mean that if a user comes and if he wants to search for something in a particular place and he knows nothing about the particular concept, this navigation system can help him, you know, I mean, can help him just go through each kind of cluster all the results and go through each of them, each one of, you know, those related concepts. Well, it says that the way this it does this is the initial step, it would just give a normal keyword search and get the results, and each result would start would form as a base for the navigation, and using that it goes to the next step. I mean, it just keeps navigating to the, you know, showing the similar results. And then how, I mean, the way the first step happens, where it gives the set of all the results for a keyword, and then once you get the result, and all the, I mean, from a result, from a particular point to go to the next point, it uses a method called WIFS. What it does is, it takes two pages, and it kind of sees the probability that if you're in this page, what's the probability that you'd go to the next page? It says that, I mean, this kind of betters the conventional search things. But I think what I felt about this paper is that, you know, they're trying to reinvent the whole wheel. I mean, they would say that there are two kinds of things. One is a hybrid, and the other one is a conventional. What they say is the normal search engines, what they do is once they give they use the search results and then cluster them. But these things, they use this method. They claim that they use the classifications which are already made in the web. They say that since the humans are the ones who create the web, they create these documents in a kind of a classification. For example, if you go to any site and see guitar, and you'll have set of Wikipedia or something, set of category, all the links which correspond to guitar itself. But the problem is, but I think what they're trying, but they don't, I really feel that when you, the normal search engines, Google and all, when they give the results itself, they do take the link structure of the web into account. And then even though they classify the results after, I mean, for the keyword, but the results in the first place they would have got is anyway based on the link structure. And the second thing they would, the second criticism that I would have for this paper is that they take the starting point. They say that the first link that the user clicks, they consider that as the to say that the user has been satisfied with this result, and then from there they would navigate to show the similar pages. And they did not, their method does not, I mean, there's no way they can say that, you know, until and unless the user says that, gives a rating that this page has been helpful for me, you cannot say that that was the final result that they really wanted. And the next one is the relations to the course. I mean, the course we have studied a lot about the link structure of the web and how the search engines use the link structure to be able to give similar measures, and also the clustering algorithms in the class that we learned kind of help us to understand what the paper talks about. I would definitely not say. I mean, thing is, as in reading the paper, I really felt that, you know, what Google's similar pages gives is what they're doing. I mean, if you go to Google similar pages, and if you go to Yahoo, and they give similar pages, if you give a link and say similar pages, it does give you pages which are related to that link. And I mean, probably the reason why one of the authors is from Yahoo, and I don't know, they're just giving a new name to what they've been done, and, you know, just presented it as a paper.
So you won't accept the paper?
No, I won't accept it.
Alright. Yeah, like, alright. No. Thanks.
But at the end, we'll actually thank you.
it actually might not be a bad idea for the rest of you to state at the end of the paper whether you would have accepted this paper or not. I want to see whether we would have accepted any paper. Anything else in the what? Search, you're still on search? Okay. So obviously there must be some in search, okay. Do you have what's your name now? Do you have it here? Alex, there you go. Okay.
Okay. My name is Newton Alex, and today I'll be presenting the paper Efficient Search in Large Textual Collections with Redundancy. This paper was presented by Zhang and Searle. Well, this paper is not totally new. The same author, Thorsten Searle, had actually presented a paper in the last WWF 2005. It was like three-level caching for efficient query processing, and this paper has like taken most of the concepts from that and a little more of it. This is more of an application. Okay. You know, the paper basically deals with efficient search or efficient indexing for primarily the Internet Archive, where you have multiple versions of the same web page. Okay, and they say it can be extended to other such archives which have multiple versions of the same documents. For example, email archives. Now, every time you do a replay all, you have the same block sent again. So you have repetitions of the same data in that. Okay, now the problem is, most of you have done search engines here, and if you use your search engines to index the Internet Archive, you know, that's the problem stated here. Okay, if there are 10 successive versions, then your index would be like 10 times that needed for a single, version. The authors here provide, they have come up with a method which will reduce the space requirement. Okay. The proposed solution, it's a new general framework which primarily concentrates on reducing the space requirement, and they have done some modifications to the document at a time query processing algorithms to take into account their new modifications or new proposals. Okay, the main features, there are like three main features I've listed down here. The first thing is content-dependent partitioning techniques. Okay, they directly don't partition the web pages. They don't consider the web pages as a whole. They instead fragment the web pages into, sizes, variable sizes, depending on the content. Okay, for this, they use a technique called winnowing. And winnowing is already an established technique which is proven to perform pretty well. And according to winnowing, you just take a paper and you divide the paper into, like, strings of or words, 20 words, together, and each of those 20 words will be converted into an integer using a hash function, and then you use a bigger window, and now your document is basically represented as a form of, it's a sequence of numbers. You move a bigger window over that and find the smallest number in that window and divide the file, all the fragment before the smallest number and the fragment after the smallest number. Okay. And once they get the fragments, they do some kind of similar indexing that we used to do in our projects, but instead of, they don't enter all the fragments. They first verify if the fragment is already existing in the index. If the fragment already exists, then they reject that fragment. And for this, they use two kind of sharing. They have local sharing and global sharing. In case of local sharing, they just verify if the fragment exists in the same web page, in the previous versions of the same web page. And it most probably will be the case, because web pages don't change drastically over time. And the second one is global sharing, wherein they take each fragment and verify if it is present, in the entire corpus. And only unique fragments will be indexed, and they'll be hashed using MD5 checksums. Okay, and finally they have modified the document at a time. Okay, now document at a time is, there are like two types, basically document at a time and terms at a time. We know the term document matrix. So instead of going term-wise, they use the document-wise, and they have modified the algorithm to take into consideration the new fragments that would be used instead of the pages. Okay, critique. Okay, well, this paper is more or less similar to the Google News paper that we had reviewed some time back. Probably I was biased by that paper because I didn't find much details about the hardware. This again deals with huge amounts of data. So I didn't find much details about the hardware or the algorithms used. They just have given you know, verbal description of the algorithm that so and so. And secondly, they highlight a feature saying their framework supports deleting unused frames. Now the whole point of version system is to have the older frames with you. I don't exactly realize why they need a delete function. And then again, when they delete the function, when a fragment is deleted, you know, we know that this not going to be repeated fragments, there will be unique fragments. So a fragment can belong to multiple pages. So when you delete a fragment, it's going to affect multiple pages at the same time. So that has not yet been taken care of. Okay, relation to the course, this is more or less similar to the Google newspaper, and this is very much similar to the search engine we did. This is a better way of representing that, efficient way of indexing and stuff. Okay.
Crawlers? Is there anybody else in search? No, right? No, crawlers. Mandar. Do you, have you already sent it?
Yeah.
This one.
Yeah.
Okay. The paper is about combining classifiers to identify online databases. The problem area the paper addresses is if you want to build an application related to a specific domain, say molecular biology, then it is very difficult to find which of the all the online databases available on the web are related to my particular domain, and like which are the forms that I should start with if you want to probe the databases. So we need to find out those forms which are relevant and which are entry points to the databases. So if we try to answer these three questions, then we can visualize what exactly this paper is addressing. Where are the online databases in the web? So first we need a mechanism to find out which are the online databases and forms related to it. So they have used the form focus crawler for identification of these forms. This is the existing technique. So they are just using these forms called form crawlers like FFC. But the problem with these crawlers is the result set written by these crawlers, which are diverse and which are not related to domain. Also they contain two types of form, which are like one is searchable forms, another is non-searchable forms. Non-searchable form consists of only those text fields which can submit inputs, which are not used for exploring the databases. So it is very important to find out which forms are doors to these databases. The last problem is like the main problem, which are relevant to my domain, because we need a crawler which gives some domain specific information. The solution this paper proposes is mainly using existing classifiers. So the classification techniques, those are not novel, but the way they are combining these two techniques into hierarchical way, the system they call as HiFi. They have used the crawler, the classifiers in the two stages. One is generic and another domain specific. Now the importance lies in the concept is when we see a waveform, they have partitioned the waveform into two spaces, which is content and one is structure. The structure is used by GFC, the generic classifiers, and it classifies based on searchable or non-searchable, and the next component DSFC, which is domain specific classifiers, which picks the forms those are relevant to my particular domain. An important characteristic that I can point out is for the domain specific decision making, they visualize the form as a bag of words model, because when we see a particular form, there are structures to the form like selection list, text boxes, inputs. Now the selection list and text boxes counts. Those indicate whether the form is searchable or not, but the actual text content that is present in the form, but like the names of the boxes or all the text information or paragraph from the forms, those indicate the domain of the form. So they have used both this characteristic in both classifiers. Critique. The main problem I identified with this kind of technique is the whole web is trying to present the content in a very semantic way or structured way, and these particular techniques are taking us back to the bag of word models, which don't consider the different kind of interfaces that online databases are proposing, like the web services and some semantic web annotations to services. So just considering the bag of word kind of criteria for classification of these online databases, sometimes I feel it's not going to be a very strong argument in the future. Structure of web pages. Also, the way they classify forms into searchable and non-searchable is like they have kind of knowledge where like if the particular form has X number of selection lists, then it is highly probable that the form will be a searchable form. But as the structure of web is evolving, new user interface techniques are evolving, these kind of statistics may not help in long term. So the accuracy of the form in the future is questionable. Well, the HiFi is the system that the paper proposes and which is directly linked to our information integrity discussion, and because we tries to select databases which are relevant to a particular integration application. And but there are different components of this HiFi application like domain specific classifiers which are using the concept from test classification, and the GFC, which is generic classifiers, which identifies the tags in the HTML form which has direct links to the information extraction part. So more or less the whole paper is nothing beyond our course materials. That's all I want.
I do have one comment, which is that even if the databases themselves are structured, you discovering them can still be done in an unstructured fashion. So this precedes the information integration step where you actually have to find the databases that you're going to integrate. And they're just doing it by crawling. So at that time, they might very well use bag of words model. But then once they get the databases, they can use the structure to do, you know, global as view or local as view. So it's a useful separate piece which we did not actually. I mean, how do you find the databases you're going to integrate is what they're actually finding.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, one of your systems is at least Stanford.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, crawlers, anybody else? Web graphs? Okay, who is first?
Random.
You are random web crawl? Yeah, then you then. You? Which are adaptive? This one? Okay, it's still in the crawlers. Okay, good. Okay, you sent it. There you go. Okay.
Okay, so this paper is actually very similar to the last one, except it involves a learning component as well. So the problem is that, you know, there are tons of pages that we don't have access to because they're in the deep web and we're only searching on the surface. So if we have some, you know, topic-specific search we're wanting to do to find certain forms that contain information about a certain topic, you can really increase the number of forms returned as well as relevance of them by using learning. So this is called, it's an adaptive crawler for hidden web entries, AIC, which is kind of an unfortunate acronym. And it uses the FFC as well. So the basic idea is all that's in white is the FFC. You have a crawler that goes through and it uses a page classification scheme to see whether or not the page is on topic. And then it uses a link classifier to determine from words that exist around the anchor text or the link how far away that's going to be from the next form that is searchable. And then it uses a frontier manager, which is a priority queue system where it not only you have different priority queues that are set up for the different distances from the link classifier, and then from the one that's the shortest distance, you can also find you can select based upon the topicality. And the important thing about the FFC is it doesn't just use a greedy method of finding the one that's closest and most relevant, because it will actually, every single time this priority queue is emptied, it takes in the data it's been accumulating in a new priority queue and puts it back in. So the data isn't updated to the priority queue continuously. It's, you know, it exhausts all the information from the current page, brings in the next information, and so forth. And that'll be important in a second. So the additions of AIC is you have the DSFC, which was kind of described in the last paper, and it also has this link learner, which the general idea is that you have the FFC or actually you have yeah, the FSC, which determines you know, which document to go to next, to find the next form. And you then have the what's called like a problem generator in learning, where you want to explore some so you can increase the learning rate beyond just doing the greedy approach. And that's already implemented with how the FSC is set up with priority queues. You're going to be exploring documents which might have long-term benefit as well. And then you have the evaluation. You actually see, you store the paths, you, for every single form you visit, you store the path that you went to get to that form. And you store all the text that was around the different anchors. So then you can learn new classification schemes and feed that back into the link classifier. So all the learning is done on the link classifier. That's the important part. So in evaluation, they show that the results vary depending on the topic quite greatly. So the one that's the dark red is the just FFC by itself. And the one that's on top of all of them is this method, AKE. So with auto, it's not too different, it's a little better. But with book, it's a lot different. And how they saw this, or what they attributed this to, is the fact that when they were looking for books, their classifier was biased with the fact that they're only looking for information about bookstores. So if the link text around it had something to do with bookstores, or the page classifier found something about a bookstore, it would look, it would, you know, be a good place to look for books, book information, book forms. But they found that also there are information on tons of other websites about books, you know, that aren't bookstores. So the learning element is able to go through and discover that. So some concerns I might have is, besides this concern, so first of all, you could have databases that contain information about tons of different topics that aren't necessarily apparent in the query scheme. So like on IMDb, I can find information about movie reviews, even though I can only really search for movies or actors and things. So there's a lot of information that can be discovered within a database that isn't related to the query. So you could do some learning based upon what you actually discover from the database after you find it. Additionally, you know, I'm not, you know, an expert on FFC, but I'm not yet convinced that just looking at the information around the link really is the best way to find out whether or not there's going to be a form there, and whether or not that form's going to be on topic. But like I said, I'm not an expert, and I don't have another better method for it. And I had another comment, but I forgot it. So links to the class. So a huge portion of the web is deep, as we discussed. And but it's still really important to search this information for structured data. And there are a lot of applications that are in topic-specific mining. So if you want information about books aggregated from a lot of sources, you know, the easiest method is just to select your sources ahead of time and write your own classifiers and things like this in your own schemas. But you know, that's not very robust. And also, FSC uses this link neighborhood text, as we discussed. You know, and traditional classification techniques like MBC for staying on topic. And additionally, there is that aspect of the frontier manager, which we discussed at Crawling. And it has an unfortunate name like Shingles and MBC, AKE. And that's it.
Do any of the people who did the crawling know how many, approximately how many online databases are there on the web? Who is the next? You.
Okay, good.
I emailed.
Oh, you just emailed right now. Okay.
While he's setting up, according to some studies, including one with here in CACM, there are about 350,000 structured databases that are on the web. That's based on a sampling study. So that's the number that, you know, so I was looking at in your plot, how many can you get? B50K is the maximum. That's like what keep in mind. Are they going to 8 billion or 9 billion bits?
This paper is about.
You need to do.
This paper is about random web crawls. So first, the difference between web crawls and web graph. Web graphs are actually the real structures which exist, the real links between the real pages. Web crawl, while is just a biased image which is presented to us. At least that is what this paper claims. So this paper is a rather pessimistic kind of paper. It claims that we will never get a real picture of the web. All we have is just what the crawler presents us, and we can never interpret the actual structure of the web from that. The real reason behind knowing the actual structure of the web is algorithms like page ranks and all, they are very much dependent on the structure of the web. Even the adversarial nature of the web will be interested in it. So it's like everyone is interested in the real structure of the web, but we can never get to know it. This is what at least the paper claims. So what the author did, they simulated the crawling process rather than the page writing process. So many of the earlier web graph models are using like preferential model, copy model. All those are like taken to factors like the way humans write the pages, like the social factors, the computer science factors, all those factors. But the authors have only made assumptions about the Zipf's law, that the in degree and out degree of the pages follows the Zipf's law, and based on that they have constructed, based on the assumptions they have constructed a web graph. And the thing they found out like this, that even with just following the Zipf's law, all the properties which were displayed were the same as which they were displayed following the earlier copy earlier graph laws. So only if you follow Zipf's law, then also we got the same results. So they claim that, so Zipf's law is enough to describe it. What they did was like they took the crawling whole the crawl. So they had a set of pages, then based on those pages which were already crawled, they had like the in degree each the pages were in list, and a single page was put in number of time equal to its in degree. So this basically gives us the total number of the whole links in the world in the web, which the crawler had found. Then following the Zipf's law, they took out the pages and constructed the set from it, and from it they found out the Zipf's law. They constructed a web crawl. The thing is, the web crawl which they constructed had all the properties like small world phenomena, clustering, everything which were displayed in the real web graph, or rather so-called real web graph. So they say that only Zipf's law is enough to describe the graph, and so we even using all the social factors which we consider, we never get the real view. So we do not have any idea about what the real web is. My criticism of the paper is like the authors have used Zipf's law. Assuming Zipf's law, they have simulated the crawling process, but while evaluating, they have told that this follows Zipf's law, so it is according to what the crawl actually exists. Now if you use Zipf's law to simulate the process, I think our output will always be according to Zipf's law. Also, like many of the evaluation criteria which they have used, like they are commonly observed in graphs following Zipf's law. So basically if we follow Zipf's law, then they will always be present. So they should have used certain more evaluation criteria. Also, now just based on this, authors like conclude that web crawls are different from web graph, but this is just like what they feel. They haven't given any proof, like no talks about what actual web graph is, nothing. Using this, they found that only using Zipf's law we can find the web crawls are same as web graph, then actual web graphs aren't same as web crawls. So I disagree with that point of view. this was like very closely related with the many of the things which we covered in the lectures, like Zipf's law, small world phenomena, all this which are covered. Also, like the study of crawlers was relevant for this. That's it.
Okay, next. Web graphs, search quality and precision. You have one? Okay. Okay. How many are left, by the way? Raise your hand. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times 5. Ooh. That's, it should be possible, but it's not. Okay, what's your name?
Send an email.
You just sent an email.
Hi, I'm Sanjay and I would be talking about the paper Navigating the Intranet with High Precision. Well, before starting with the paper description, I would like to give a small current scenario. There have been a lot of research performed for internet search technologies, but not much focus is given to the intranet search technologies. And that too, if you consider the navigational pages, not much of focus is being given. So the problem that has been addressed in this paper is that the search technologies over the larger enterprises suffers very poor quality results, and there is very, very less precision with the current technologies. So they have addressed an approach that can improve the precision. Moreover, what do you mean by navigational pages? A personal homepage of a person and or the homepage of a department in an organization could be an example of a navigational page. So they focus on providing high quality results when you search for navigational queries. The current approach actually provides a higher precision rate when searched. So let's look on to the solution that they followed. It is basically of three steps. First is to identify the navigational pages. It follows a local analysis and a global analysis. Local analysis could be identifying the navigational pages first. This can be done by using anchor tags, which mention Sanjay's personal homepage. So it says that it is a personal homepage, or they can use the URL as such, which ends with index.html. So index could be as a navigational query. And the next step is to generate the global analysis. What exactly the global analysis does is it prunes all the spurious data that are present in the local analysis. Like say that in the case that they used, there are 5.5 million pages, and after doing the global analysis there are only 50 navigational pages present. So all the unnecessary pages are removed and you're left only with the exact navigational pages. And after you get these navigational pages, you can generate the term variants which can be used with each page. So term variants are basically indexes that can be created. And after getting all the terms, we can create an index that can be used for answering these navigational queries. All these similar navigational pages are placed into semantic buckets. That is, very relevant pages are placed into semantic buckets. Well, they have used an approach of regular expression and external dictionaries. External dictionaries could be basically a set of database that contains the employee names, or it could be an external dictionary that they use from other sources. Well, my comments on the solution, I do agree that this approach definitely increases the precision rate of the search, but compared to the traditional searches that have been done through the intranet. They have used a technique called geosensitivity. This basically involves three steps. One is the geotagging that tags your URLs based on the location of the page. So I personally feel they must have not given much importance to the geosensitivity, because some of the pages must have lost or wrongly classified when through geographical locations, and person available in the other locations might not have access to that page. And basically, in the rules that they have used for generating the person names, they have just mentioned that the rules are so and so rules have been used, but a clear explanation is not given. These person names are like Robert, Bob. So these will be allies namespaces that could be handled in the intranet search. Well, and the other problem is the dictionary sets could not be available for all the domains that we might consider, so that could also be a problem. Well, considering the relation to the CSE 494 class, we have focused more towards the internet search technologies and the algorithms that improve the search results. This paper basically, although it focuses on only the intranet search technologies, it provides a comparison at each point why internet search technologies cannot be used for intranet search technologies. So that provided me a good understanding, and it helps you to distinguish between the two domains, the intranet and internet. And thus the overview of the algorithms that used, it shows why they cannot be used alternatively. Thank you.
So some of you should actually try whether, any of you tried whether Google AU version is different from Google main. If it is, then they are using separate internet search versus internet search. It's an interesting problem. I hope you guys, you know, remember that searching on internet could be different from internet. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so we know who it is. Next.
All right. My name is Sergey, and I took the requirement for one slide literally, so I have one slide. I will be all over the board, and probably I chose the most trivial paper because I was the first to choose. My main opinion.
If you press that, that's the laser pointer.
Oh, thank you. Oh, great. So basically, I want to start with my main observation. It's readable, and most importantly, the concepts are trivial to us. After taking the class, we know these concepts, and we could have applied these concepts the way the authors in the paper suggest. Basically, we could have done this thing, and in terms of our last class discussion, it was our corn to cut. We should have done it. So basically, the paper is about combining two very familiar concepts. The authors start with describing three major areas of research that are going to tie together. Well, basically, it's two areas of research. One is improving web search quality. The other one is researching new social annotations. According to the authors, although a lot of research has been done, especially in the past several years, in ranking web pages in terms of their similarity through the query and ranking web pages based on their quality, nobody has yet connected these studies with the study of social annotations. So the authors claim they are actually the first to integrate these two concepts and to use social annotations to improve the qualities of traditional search. So basically, they take the delicious website, you know, delish.us, and use the social bookmarks, the tags which people have assigned to all sorts of web pages, to improve the search for these pages. So basically, before I go to the proposed solution, they base their suggestion on two major assumptions. One assumption is that these bookmarks provide a very good source of summarization for a web page, and this is very much like a lot of concepts we discussed in class. For example, anchor text. We discussed that if we take a page, say the Ford Motor Corporation, nowhere on this page it says that this is a car manufacturer. But if you take the anchor text from anywhere, from Yahoo, for example, it will say car manufacturer and a link to Ford. So car manufacturer not appearing on the Ford Motor website is a great summary of the page. Same here. They think that these tags will be a good summary of the pages without actually appearing on the pages themselves. The second assumption is that the more tags, the better. Basically, the more tags means the greater popularity of the particular page. Therefore, they suggest using two algorithms, social sim rank or social similarity rank to calculate similarity between annotations and the query, and social page rank to calculate the quality of the pages in terms of the annotation count. social sim rank. They start with a very simple formula. I won't even go into it, and they proceed to a much better solution, which basically builds a bipartite graph of web pages and annotations with users. So basically, the edges go from the annotation or label, say Linux or Ubuntu, to specific pages, and the users indicate the count of these annotations. So therefore, they transform, they generate, based on this bipartite graph, they generate an annotation-annotation correlation matrix. Therefore, they are able to analyze the correlation of two different labels, not based on their lexical similarity, but based on their co-occurrence. And this is very similar to what we've discussed in class so many times. Take the term-term matrix. Correlation matrix, where we analyze terms, how they are correlated, even if they are not identical lexically. Say, for example, automatically generating thesauruses. A similar concept was discussed in the SEMTag. I don't see where it is. Yeah, the SEMTag paper, where the SEMTag paper used the window of context for disambiguating two labels which pointed to the same concept but were completely different. The social PageRank algorithm basically is very similar to the PageRank algorithm, and according to this algorithm, quality is passed between annotations, users, and pages until convergence, and I don't have the time to go into the specifics of the algorithm. So basically, my opinion is as follows. The paper is very readable. I highly recommend it. One thing I found the authors did not mention is the adversarial nature of the web. So they did not mention the possibility of pages being tagged by for economic commercial purposes. But in general, it's very connected with the course material in terms of the vector space model, in terms of semantic tagging. We discussed it in the past several courses. So my opinion is we could have done it.
Who is next?
Is there anybody who has an exam starting 5 minutes after this class? In which case, even if you are in the end, please come ahead. So what's your name? You know, have you sent it already?
No, I sent it on a Gmail.
What?
Gmail.
Just now?
Yeah.
This one?
Yeah.
Here you go.
Yeah, I'll be talking about predicting clicks, estimating the click-through rate for new ads. Basically, we have learned about how we rank our search engine results, but this is like a totally different thing. Like, we have to rank now the ads which appear on the right side of our search engine. So the click-through rate is like an important component for determining the ranks of the ads. Basically, this paper focuses for ranking new ads. Click-through rate basically can be defined as like the number of clicks by the number of impressions. Impressions will be by the number of views the ad gets on the search page. So for old ads, it is pretty easy to compute and it's empirically evaluated. But for new ads, we can't rely on these results. So this paper focuses on this method for how we will rank for how we'll rank the new ads. It focuses on a number of feature sets. It explains why it extends its work from the same bit terms, because the best ad, according to what you say, statistics have been said that it is 10 times the average ad. So that is why this paper focuses on identifying features for an ad. The features can be identified from the following categories like appearance, attention capture, reputation, landing page, quality, and relevance. Basically, an ad is also a structure like a URL, a title, then the clicks, then the views. So they have explored this structure and have found out the following categories and used a total of 81 features to find the click-through rate for a new ad.
They basically use a weighted combination of each of these features to predict what will be the click-through rate for this new ad. They have shown a number of results on how each feature affects the results. So they have used like a term CTR wherein they will do an exact match on the bid terms. Bid terms are basically those terms wherein in the advertisement the advertiser will say that I want my query to be displayed when a certain term like this appears. So it can be an exact match or a broad match. In case of an exact match, a particular feature is followed. In case of a broad match, a particular feature is followed. A broad match is basically related to a related term CTR, wherein, like, if you have a query, say, big shoes, then and another query like shoes. So shoes is basically a subset of big shoes. So how is the big shoes related to that query? This is how the related term CTR is evaluated. Then there are a number of other features, as I mentioned, the appearance and attention capture and everything. Appearance can be like how the title, how long is the title, what is contained in the body. Attention capture can be something like does the title contain certain words, because there are certain words, because if they are present, then there is a high probability that the user will click on the page. Then landing page can be like, what is the quality of the landing page, like does it have flash, or there can be various features. Then relevance can be like, does the bid term appear exactly as in the title, something like that. So this basically uses 81 features and a weighted combination of each features to predict the CTR for the new ad. Now the criticism I felt was the data set was not standard as such. As this is a new field, I think you can go through with this criticism. The second criticism was that the CTR was independent of the query. In case a user query comes in, the CTR doesn't depend on the user query as such, because in case of an exact match, it will definitely depend. But in case of a broad match, there is no relation between the query and the CTR. That is why this paper doesn't focus on this area. Also, this paper can extend itself by allowing advertisers to improve their CTR value by telling them recommendations like, if you give something like this in the title, you will get a better CTR value and hence you'll get a higher rank in the ad results. And also they haven't highlighted on various issues like suppose like a competitor might click on the search results, keep on clicking on the search results, and it is possible that the person who's paying the search engine will definitely drain off his money, whatever revenue as such. That is why there are various other issues, fraudulent issues that have to be dealt with. So they have to be looked into. So basically, the relation I'll guess is like, we have dealt with page ranking, but this is like a totally new CTR ranking sort of thing. And also they have, as always, we've seen that apples and oranges of features has been done by this paper again. So this is it.
Does anybody know who's next? Or do we go to the web page? Okay, so where are we now? Social annotations are over, click estimates are over, knowledge discovery. Okay. You exist in this? Okay.
The paper is about using web to discover comparable cases for news stories. It's called compare and contrast. So what is the problem about? The problem is about the user enters a URL or a news story by himself, and he wants similar news stories which talk about similar situations but with different entities. So how is it different from normal similar pages problem? It's it's not a direct document comparison to get similar documents. They have to first of all identify what is the document talking about, so what is the main entity that is centered on, and then try to get other entities in the other comparable pages and then get whether it is in the similar context of the document which the user enters. So the basic, the interesting aspect is similar situation but with different entities on a web scale. So what is the solution proposed? So they have three components basically. So the first component is they model the given news story by the user. So once a user gives us news story, they will separate out the named entities and non-named entities. So the named entities and the non-named entities are as taken as separate vectors, and then they will find out what is the best named entity, that is the topmost entity which the document is talking about. So they term it as the main entity, and then they take the best non-named entities and give the best non-named entities as a query to Google. So once they get the results, in the results they have to compare whether the news story is similar to the given news story. So in the given, in the results, they get the they use the same component of the story modeler to get the entities, and the idea they use is similar to the SemTag paper. So once they identify the main entity, they take the words co-occurring with the main entity in the same sentence as the context vector of the named entity, of the main entity which the paper is talking about. Then they go to every page, and for every potential entity, they build this context vector and take the similarity between those named entities and the entity which is present in the actual document. So then they rank them by giving the appropriate weights to the sentences, and also they follow a model like they have the assumption that in a news article, the sentences which come first are of higher weight compared to the ones which come last. So they have appropriate weight assignment scheme for it. So other thing is like because they are working on a web scale, they need to filter out some noisy pages. So they used a clever technique here. It's like the problem they found was they were getting more directory pages. So they have a simple technique, like they just count the capitalized words, number of capitalized words, and then they put a upper limit on it. And then once it crosses, they term it as a directory page. Other thing is they take the Google summary and then compare it with the Google summary with the context vector and say if it at least crosses a minimum threshold. So these are the two clever techniques they use to avoid the noise. So how is it related to the concepts? They use a variant of TF-IDF which takes into consideration the position of the word also in the document. So because they give scores to the sentences and multiply the scores with the weights, it's related. The other thing is they have a standard named entity discoverer. ClearForest provides a semantic web services and coreference resolution algorithms. So like SemTag using TAP ontology, these guys use the ClearForest semantic web services thing. So other thing is like SemTag, in SemTag it defines a 10 word boundary. Here they define a boundary that the entity, the sentence which the entity has as a boundary. So the surprising thing is the experimental section is very weak. Though they say that their main contribution or previous work is that they are doing on a web scale, they just wind up testing with only 40 manually collected news articles, which is very surprising. And then the user study is also on mere 5 users, they say 2 undergrads and 3 grad students or something. So apart from that, what are the other criticisms? Other criticisms is like their main assumption is every news article talks about a single main entity, which is actually not the case. So they themselves discover this by the end of their experimental section, and then they leave it as a future work. So the correct thing should be to identify the topmost entities and then take them and compare with the other entities. So other thing is they remove the main entity completely from the search query. So if I enter a page like Google acquires YouTube something, so they completely ignore Google now. But there might be many cases that the same main entity will be in a similar situation in many other pages. Say example, Google acquires blogger.com. This is very similar to this page which I might be interested in. So they shouldn't be entirely removing the main entity from the search query. So the last thing is there is no theoretical justification as to how the weights are assigned. They just say the title word is assigned double the weight. So there is no theoretical justification. So I feel that there can be like linear SVM based models to learn these weights. So
hello, I'm Bhushan Pindarkar. I would be reviewing the paper on answering relationship queries on the web. Now, finding a relationship between two entities or two common people or two different places has always been a novel and a challenging task. Okay, but existing search engines, they are able to perform keyword matching and document ranking. But given two entities, they are not able to find a relationship between the them. So this paper focuses on, like, when two entities are given, they find the top ranked pages for each of the two entities, and based on the similarity between them, they show the relationship between those two entities. They have used the concept of connecting terms, which are terms having high weight for specifying the similarity. In the present web search engine, if we give two entities E1 and E2, Google is not able to find how those entities E1 and E2 are related to each other, or it doesn't show pages like showing a ranked results of relationship between E1 and E2. So this paper has tried to attempted to overcome this shortcoming of the search engine, and it is entirely dependent on the Google search engine. The solution proposed. In this case, it's the almost more or less similar to Google. It has consists of two interfaces in which the user is able to accept user is able to enter two entities E1 and E2. Retrieves the ranked results for E1 as well as E2. The documents are pre-processed to form stemming and remove the stop words. And later on, the main crux of the system is like calculation of term weight for the common term T, which is present in the results of entities of E1 as well as the results of E2. And going ahead, they use the cosine similarity method to calculate the similarity between how those ranked pages of P1 and ranked pages of P2 are interrelated to each other. And depending on the ranking, so the higher ranked pages are having higher relationship between the two entities, and they are displayed onto the system. So it's a very straightforward system with some modification to the Google search engine. Criticism, I could say that here they have specified that top ranked pages of E1 and top ranked pages of E2 in a Google search engine may not show any relationship between the two. I don't agree with this, because if we type like basketball and like Michael Jordan, there are chances that the pages retried for basketball and the pages retried for Michael Jordan would show the relationship between the two. So that's what I stated. The fact might be exact the opposite one. Moreover, the entities, when the paper goes into the details, they are shown the relationship between entities E1 and E2 by a term EC. It would have been better had they given a good explanation of how that relationship is basically framed, what does the term stand for, or how is it important to the concept of relationship between the two entities. And the main thing is that the processing involved in the system which they have proposed is very less. They are totally dependent on the Google results. Now, if this is quite rare, if Google results are not perfect or correct, which is something a rarity, the system entirely fails. So the base is Google, on which they have built their system. And moreover, that just a simple point which I just pointed out, instead of using some other algorithm for stemming, they are using a standard Porter stemmer, which might not be so perfect since I myself used it. And finally, the paper concludes by like unnecessary explanation of specifying if this step is removed in the algorithm, what will happen? If this step is removed in the algorithm, what will happen? In one statement, they are specifying then all steps are necessary, and in the conclusion, they are specifying the influence of the results if the steps are removed. So that needs to be rectified. With respect to relevance of the course, it is like the calculation of similarity between pairs P1 P2. They have used the concept of cosine similarity, which is quite straightforward. And for cosine similarity, the concept of TF-IDF is used for like the instead of document and query, they are using the page P1 and P2 to calculate the similarity. And we have learned the concepts of stemming and ranking, which are quite relevant to this paper. Thank you.
Who is next? Anybody remember? Let me check. Personalization, security and privacy and ethics. You're into privacy and ethics.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. So you must have sent it before it started.
Yeah.
There you go. Number one. Okay. When you
Alright.
So the paper that I'm going to be reviewing is Privacy Enhancing Personalized Web Search by Xu, Zhang, Chen, and Wang. And these are people based off Microsoft Research in China. So essentially, the paper tries to bring a new perspective to the whole debate on personalization of web search results, which is a very relevant topic nowadays. So the system that the authors use in this particular paper is to construct a repository of the user's personal information using the information that is resident on the user's personal computer. So the examples that they give in their paper about this kind of data would be, for example, browsing history and emails and, say, recent documents opened or accessed on the user's PC. And essentially, the authors look to use this kind of repository to build a personal profile of the user. And I think personally the biggest contribution of this paper is they come bottom up with a method to specify, like to classify the categories of interests of the user into general interests, which will be less sensitive to privacy, and specific interests, which might be a little more sensitive to the privacy issues. So the solution that they propose is actually three steps. The first step is obviously for any given user to build a profile from the base down. And this uses the source data that I was talking about in the previous slide. How they do this is essentially they use two approaches. The first approach they use is the similar terms approach. So in this approach, they use Jaccard similarity. And essentially the hypothesis is that if two terms cover the document set with a lot of overlap between them, it might indicate that either they are related to each other in some way or they express the same interest area. So they use Jaccard similarity to kind of get to this. And here in this example, you can see that personalized and search seem to have some kind of correlation with each other. And so they are in one node. The second one, the second kind of similarity that they do is a parent-child relationship, where specific terms appear with some more general terms, but the opposite is not true. And the example they give in the paper is that of badminton and sports. And they say that it's more likely when badminton appears in a given paper, that in a given document, that you're going to see the word sports. But if you do see the word sports, you can't really say anything about badminton because you might have sports and soccer, sports and football, those kind of things. So for this, they use conditional probabilities, which is a well-known method. And here you can actually see that in this graph, each of the structures that they've shown as parent-child is derived using this. The second step in their solution is to control the information that is sent to the search engine. Now, this is where the privacy part of the paper comes in. They actually have two parameters. One is min detail, which determines which part of the user profile is protected. Obviously, the higher my min detail, the lesser of my profile is sent to the search engine. And exposed ratio, which shows how much of the user's private information is actually exposed to the public server. And these two are actually inversely related. And the third step of the solution is they have a wrapper kind of thing, which basically gets the results from the search engine to the query given by the user. And then it takes a parameter alpha, which is again set by the user, so the user can control that. And then it re-ranks the pages based on this parameter and returns the re-rank results to the user. So some criticisms I had of the paper, most of them had to do with the experimental results section. For example, for something of this scale, they said that they were only considering the top 50 results before re-ranking. But it could clearly be the case that you could have a document which was, say, 55 before you applied the user's preferences. But then once you did apply the user's preferences, it went into the top 10. So that might miss documents. The second thing was their measure of search quality that they used. They used average precision, but I failed to see how it tied in with the personalization part of the whole system. Another one was testing the effect on manual privacy settings. Now, they actually let the users adjust the privacy level manually as well, not just using this min detail parameter, but they didn't really talk about how that affects the system. And of course, one of the things is the classification of terms. I might have a term which the system might consider specific, but the system might consider it general, but it might really be specific data as far as I'm concerned. If I just repeat a term a lot of times in my documents, it might become general to the system, but it is sensitive data as far as I'm concerned. About relations to the course, one of the bigger relations was, of course, personalized search with the query disambiguation examples, like, you know, if you're searching for rockets and you're a sports fan, then obviously you're looking for the basketball team. You're not looking for space exploration or NASA and all that kind of stuff. Another one was relevance feedback. This system obviously collects feedback implicitly, seeing a user's browsing history, other personal information. But for me, the biggest thrust of this paper was, at least in relation to what we covered in class, was the way it deals with unstructured data. So in class, we saw that XML and RDF and all these things deal with unstructured data. But here, they come bottom up with a whole new system that would deal with unstructured data, you know, because browsing history, emails, all of these are unstructured. And they derive a new system which uses similarity or parent-child relationships to classify this whole thing into a structured kind of data. And of course, there are the obvious things like the weighted re-ranking is very similar to page rank. And they use term similarity measures like Jaccard similarity, and they also use conditional probability. All in all, I would suggest that this is a good paper, but if there was a conditional accept, I would do that and ask them to redo their experimental results. Thank you.
Apparently, nobody is waiting to break into the room, so we will continue. Who is next? Anybody sees anything that passwords and phishing, access control and trust on the web, semantic web track? You found yourself? Okay.
I decided to read the paper on ontology summarization based on RDF sentence graphs. The main problem of this paper is to address the importance of ontology summarization to understand and select ontologies. Also, they want to potentially allow people to actually reuse ontologies that are created instead of having people create new ontologies since we have so many already. This paper discusses the ontology summarization by using RDF sentences to create the RDF sentences graph. As you see here on the top, the example actually shows an example of grouped RDF sentences, and it will eventually be converted into RDF sentence graphs. This paper interested me because there's actually no published work on ontology summarization right now, and I've actually read a couple of papers in the past about ontologies and semantic webs. This paper actually discusses the solution that was proposed, and the diagram shows the architecture of the ontology summarization. There's basically four components of the ontology summarization. There's RDF sentence, the RDF sentence builder, the graph builder, the silence assessor, and the re-ranker. With the first one, the RDF sentence builder, the user actually inputs the ontology, the length that they prefer, and then also other preferences they may have. The RDF sentence builder actually creates the ontology grouped into RDF sentences. After that, it's passed on to the graph builder. With the graph builder, it actually builds the RDF sentence graphs, and then the sentence graphs actually describes the links between the RDF sentences and ontology. After that, the cell assessor actually ranks the RDO sentences based on the link analysis of the graph, which is the centrology, which is a measurement that's originated from the analysis of social networks. After that, this is actually what is contributed to this paper with the re-ranker. It actually produces the final summary, where it's actually a new ranking algorithm they proposed, where they combine two algorithms to reduce redundancy and enhance coherence. My criticism of the paper is that is because I think it's interesting because there's no published work on ontology summarization. Because there was no published work, when they did their evaluation, it was actually kind of hard for them to evaluate and see how accurate their ontology summarizations were. So they actually did their ontology summarization based on text summarization. I believe that this paper was related to the class because we discussed semantic web and ontology. We also determined, this paper also determined the ranking of RDS sentences using centrology social networks, and they actually compared page ranks and authority hubs. Also, we did talk about RDS as well. And that's it.
Time for questions.
Sorry, I was trying to go fast.
So who uses the summarization? So presumably if there are multiple ontologies and I'm trying to pick which ontology I get to use, is that the idea?
What you want to use and what you want to understand with the ontologies, there are different languages that you want to use to describe the semantic web, and you have the choice to actually create your own. You know how there's so many that are languages that can be created. What they do is actually it summarizes the different ontologies and say, do I want to use, you know, the different ones that we want to use, or we want to create new ones.
And what does the summarization, is it a sort of a textual summarization, or does it show certain, I'm trying to understand what would I want to know. Let's say there are two car ontologies, let's say, how would it differentiate between them?
I don't know.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Who is next? Semantic web applications, similarity and extraction, query languages and databases. Yeah, why did I get that? Key, right? Where are you? Are you here? Young Kin? No, not Young Kin, no, not Young Key. You have it here?
Reading the gap between. Or this one, printing the gap.
Oh, you did not write your page name. Okay. Oh. Okay. I'm sorry. Okay.
Where is the mouse?
Yeah, it just keeps going away.
I'll
see what I have to keep up with. You guys. Okay, shall I start?
Yeah.
Okay,
thank you. The paper I read is bridging the gap between all and the relational database. And as we discussed in the class, there are the all and the relational database are very different. This paper focuses on the IC. IC here means integrated constraint. And in relational database, IC play two roles. They are used in data reasoning and schema reasoning. One example of data reasoning is IC is used to check database integrity. And one example for the schema reasoning is IC is used to compute query subsumption. And IC in OR they have the usually in or IC are used for the checking whether a data instance is consistent with a schema. But the behavior of the check here is different from the check data integrated in relational database. Let's take a look at an example. And we have an inclusion dependency. It's kind of integrated constraint. And this constraint states that every person must have a social security number. So when we try to update the relational database, and if we want to add a person into this database, this inclusion dependency will be interpreted as a check. This check will see whether there is a social security number associated with this person. If not, this the update of the database will be rejected. But for in all, this inclusion dependency, it will imprint it as a existential restriction, and that means if we want to add a person into the ontology, but this person does not have a social security number, it doesn't read an error. It just leads to a inference that this person has a social security number, but we don't know what that. I guess the reason of that is mostly the OR is regarded as a incomplete database. So this paper, the goal of this paper is to try to find a way to capture the intuition in IC in relational database. The description logic knowledge base in OR is composed of two parts. It's a schema part, we call it T-box, and the data part, we call it A-box. This paper proposed to extend the description logic knowledge base by dividing the taxonomies in T-box into two categories. One of them contain the standard taxonomies. All of these taxonomies try to imply new facts. They are as the same as the original taxonomies in the T-box. And the other category is constraint taxonomies. These taxonomies are designated as integrated constraints. And all of these constraints will be used to check whether or necessary information is derivable. Their behavior is as same as those in relational database. According to this paper, one advantage of this approach is that if the IC are satisfied, when we try to process the user's query, we don't have to consider this IC. That means the query processing efficiency will be better. I think the best point of this paper is that it gave a fairly complete comprehension of OR and relational database, and it helps us have a very good understanding of ontology and relational database. And this is the abstract. This comparison made by this paper.
So are you the last? Is there anybody else? Is anybody reading papers? Okay, session, where are we? This one?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll use this.
This is the paper I'm trying to present. The topic is about semantic similarity measure between two words. Why this problem is interesting? Because the semantic similarity between words can be widely used in both information retrieval and natural language processing. So the solution proposed is basically based on the information available on the web. It consists of two parts. The first one is page counts. The second one is the patterns from extracted from the text snippets. And then in the end, it used SVM to combine these two parts. And for page counts, the solution used four measures for occurrence. It made a little modification. It changes the condition for the zero score, trying to suppress the random co-occurrence. For the pattern extraction, it used n-gram method to make use of the context of the two words, just like this example here. Toyota and Nissan are two major Japanese car manufacturers. By shifting the windows to extract the context for these two words, and use the statistics for the pattern frequency to decide whether an indicator is reliable or not. And at the end, it puts these two parts into a feature vector F. The first part is 200 pattern frequency from the text from the pattern extraction, and the second part is the four co-occurrence measures. And then it used two cluster SVM and for clustering new coming pairs of words into synonymous or non-synonymous. My criticism of the solution is that I think these statistic and content-based pattern selection is not that reliable, since there are no ontology, no taxonomy or syntax templates. So it just used these kind of shifting windows to extract the patterns from the context. So these kind of patterns can, the frequency will be very sparse and full of noises. And it also, the extracted patterns can also be very correlated, such as this example, SNY, SNYR, SNYR2. So this is very similar. And it also ignores some meaningful patterns if the two words are far apart from each other, just like this word. Since it used n-gram and the n can only be 2, 3, 4, 5, so if it is far apart, it is beyond the range of the n-gram, the patterns will be ignored. And in the feature vector, the pattern frequency takes 200 seats, but the co-occurrence measures only takes 4. So I think the effect of the co-occurrence measures will just have little contribution to the final feature vector. And the last thing is that this method is based on the information from the web, so it would be error prone for uncommon words, such as some rarely used professional terms. In these cases, as it is mentioned in our class, we can use user voting for this kind of professional terms. How this paper related to our course? First of all, it is based on web information. There is no existing background knowledge database for the similarity measuring. So it has some inevitable drawbacks. It's just as I just mentioned, it's error prone for uncommon words. The second thing is the solution makes use of collective unconscious. It's our course mentioned big ideas number three. It tried to extract the semantic information from the term co-occurrence. And the third one is co-occurrence measures. Actually, co-occurrence measures is a kind of similarity measures. And here, Jaccard overlap and PMI, we have learned this in our course. And the last one is the pattern extraction is from the context rather than from the ontology, like the paper we have mentioned in the class. And also, it is decided by the statistics rather than the templates from syntax tree. And the n-grams is similar as the 20-word window for sport in the paper we have mentioned in our class. Okay, that's it.
So I did prepare a 3-hour lecture that I was going to do after this, but we probably would go. A couple of comments. One is that, in fact, you should think, I mean, at least for your own benefit, I mean, I was actually cutting these pieces of paper, but probably it's too late to do this. You should write at least three things other than your own paper that you cut today, okay? And when you go to a conference, a real conference, by the end of the day, you're dead. By end of 2 days, you would like to go home, you know, and you basically had, 18 papers in God knows how long, 2 hours, okay? So you have to think of what are the pieces that actually, you know, registered for you. And you should also think of what makes things stick in terms of, there are also presentation issues. There are some talks, I'm sure, without realizing, you listen to more carefully than others. Okay, you need to understand, I mean, ultimately it's a communication issue, you know, it's, you know, you have to jump, you know, there has to be something. At the end of the day, people are just hoping that you'd be done and they can go home, just like you are right now, and you have to jump, okay, and you have to make people pay attention to you, and you would find, when you write down the three things that you remembered, you can actually analyze why. You know, sometimes it's because it's something that's very interesting to you. Sometimes it's because that speaker somehow made it interesting. Okay. And the third thing is, I'm generally very cynical about having students present because I think I'm paid to present and you are paid to listen. But I'm very impressed. In fact, I think at 5-minute level, many of the papers that you presented here, I would like to go back and read. The two issues on that, one is you have office hours for me now, so I might send you questions that I wanted to ask, but there was no time. So just as I had office hours and you never showed up, you have office hours, I would send you email asking you clarification. The second thing is, if it was just based on these presentations, I think there would have been a lot more A's and A pluses in the class. Thankfully, we had a midterm, so we can keep the A's and A pluses down. This is supposed to be a joke. I mean, you were you're so dead tired that you just want to go home. But that's all I have to say. I think the fact, remember that in Physics 101, you cannot read a physics conference paper at the end of the Physics 101 and understand. And so many of you guys kept saying, I mean, you know, we could have done these parts, which is sort of interesting. It could be that it's a pretty shallow discipline and it would disappear by next year. I may not have to teach this course, or that it's actually so young and fresh that anybody with like an undergraduate level background on this area can actually at least generate ideas, and then they'll spend, I guess, 2-3 semesters evaluating it. You know, one of the things you'll find in most of these papers is the evaluation has to be web scale, and somebody really poo-pooed the poor guys who only had 40 stories. You know, I would like them. Yeah, so you are going to do a thesis which has like 10,000 stories. You know, he's my student, so he's going to do a really big evaluation because he made fun of those people. And the other thing is, I do like the fact that you are skeptical, okay? I mean, it's very important not
to be, maybe I force you to be skeptical, but it's very important not to be impressed, okay? Because from being impressed, you don't learn a thing. You know, you should be impressed about my teaching, but that's a different story. But everything else, you should not be impressed, because, you know, some skepticism comes, you know, how can, you know, everything looks great when it's in LaTeX and it's already been accepted to the top conference in the field. It's a, by the way, is probably the hardest conference to get into in terms of numerator by denominator. Their percentage of acceptance is like ridiculously low, 13% or 14%, okay? What? 10%. So it's a, you know, it could mean that lots of random people are writing papers, increasing the denominator, or it could also mean that it's really a hard area. But the interesting thing is, these are all papers that went through the review process, and yet we found, you know, at least several of you said there were problems with the way evaluations are done, the way the ideas were brought up. So hopefully you would lose this sort of, if you ever had this awe of published research, I hope you will lose this, and, you know, you are just one step away from that. Okay? That's all, folks. Thank you, and have some more raspberry bars, otherwise I'll be very fat. Bye.